Hi everyone, this is Kate Marsh and the third episode of the podcast A Voice from Russia. I do apologize for the sound quality this time. My Mac has been confiscated and I'm using a voice recorder. Hopefully the sound would be fine. This episode would be more personal than others because the experience I had last weekend is too strong not to share, though maybe it relates to me and to Navalny team in general more than to the whole protest. Yet, it is something I cannot keep silent about. Actually, preparation for this episode did not go as planned, not only in terms of the equipment. On the 10th of August, we had a large sanctioned rally planned. Indeed, it turned out to be the largest opposition rally in the past 8 years. 60,000 people reported to have come to Sakharov Avenue. I had been planning to get out into the crowd and talk to some protesters to give you the sense of what was going on and to let you hear what people think and feel in Moscow these days. Instead, I had to escape from a SWAT team, talk to the landlord who I rented an apartment for an improvised studio from and explain to him why the door to his apartment had been smashed, and estimate the chances of my colleagues and friends getting into a big trouble. That was quite a day. Before I start telling the story, let me remind you that this podcast is a part of the fundraising campaign I launched to raise money for my master's studies at the University of Berkeley. You can find more details about myself and my motivation, as well as make a donation, on GoFundMe.com. You just need to type A Voice from Russia in the search field there, and my campaign page will appear in the search results. To begin with, I probably need to explain that as all the TV channels in Russia are owned, or let's say controlled, directly or indirectly by the government, our team, Navalny team, uses YouTube as the major source for distribution of information. We have two main channels there. Alexei Navalny's channel, with 2.9 million subscribers now, where he posts investigations by the Anti-Corruption Foundation, and Navalny Live channel, used for short news videos and weekly live shows with various experts and Alexei Navalny himself. The second channel is also used for live broadcasting of protest events that take place all over Russia. So basically, every rally, every protest event is broadcast live on Navalny Live channel. Quite often these broadcasts are watched by dozens of thousands online and millions of viewers afterwards, so the authorities try to do their best to prevent these broadcasts from happening. They interrupt them by literally breaking into our studios. If you remember from the first episode, that's what happened with the broadcast on the 27th of July. It was interrupted by the police raid, and its presenter, Vladimir Milov, got an administrative arrest of 30 days afterwards. This time we decided not to arrange a full-scale broadcast with the studio, with the presenters and so on, but to make just a live stream of the event using several cameras in different points of the rally location and the correspondent. Formally, I do not work for Navalny Live channel, but in our team everyone is always ready to help out with any task, so the channel team asked me to support them with the preparation for the stream. One of the tasks was to find an apartment to rent on a daily basis for the production control room. We usually do that because in our experience, as you already know, it is not safe to work from the original studio. More than that, we needed an apartment not far from the rally location to carry equipment there, cameras, cranes, batteries, antennas to improve the internet signal, and so on. I found a suitable apartment rather quickly. I had a contact of a guy from whom we already rent some other apartment some time ago. He allowed me to occupy the flat right away without signing the agreement. I spent there 2 nights before the event itself making various arrangements for the stream. On the protest day, the 10th of August, those guys who were supported to work on the broadcast started to arrive to the apartment. As for me, I was monitoring the content from the regions. That Saturday, the protest was taking place not only in Moscow. Other regions held their events to support Moscow, so I was going through the pictures and videos sent to us and choosing the ones that would fit to be shown during the stream like little intermissions. Moscow rally was scheduled for 2, so at 1 I started to pack my stuff to leave the apartment for the square and talk to the people there before the start of the event. I was very slow, pausing all the time, trying to finish up all the tasks before a colleague of mine would take up my functions. Then I took some time to pack, to try on the raincoat, and at around 1:30 I left the apartment. The elevator reached the first floor, its doors opened, I stepped out and turned in the direction of the exit door looking into my phone. And then, the most scary second of my life came. I rose my eyes and saw a SWAT team of 10 to 15 people entering the building, all in black, their faces covered with balaclavas. Three or four of them, walking in the front, were holding chainsaws. For a millisecond I stumbled looking at them. It seemed like I stopped breathing, my heart ceased to pound, and the thirds were striking me one by one. What's that? Oh, coming for us? How can I warn my guys? Will they capture me here and now? Should I run back? Should I go forward and escape? How can I warn my guys? It was the longest millisecond of my life. And I passed by them with a poker face, squeezing in between the SWAT team and the wall in the narrow entrance passage, as though there was nothing unusual in a squad of ninjas at 1 p.m. on a weekend in an apartment building in the center of Moscow. The moment I turned around the corner of the building, I took out my smartphone, inserted the SIM card. It was raining. The raindrops covered the whole screen, and with my hands trembling, I wrote to my friends that the guys were coming for them. In 10 minutes, the SWAT team broke into the apartment and put the guys onto the floor. They spent almost 4 hours lying down with their hands on the nape. Then the search followed. All the personal equipment, all the laptops and phones, as well as credit cards, were confiscated. I can only imagine what my colleagues felt, so I decided to talk to one of the guys who was inside, Alexei Shuplikov, about what was going on in the apartment and how this experience influenced him. Here is a short interview with Alexei. Alexei, could you tell me what was your reaction when you saw my message reading that the SWAT team was coming to the apartment?
I was started texting for my closest friends and my girlfriend that, hello guys, SWAT crashing our door, so I can disappear for a day or maybe a couple days, but I'm okay.
And what did you do next?
I started to delete all messengers from my phone. I deleted Telegram Messenger, then I deleted Kontakte Messenger, and then they opened the door.
So that was so quick. How much time did they spend banging on the door before breaking in?
I think something about 5 minutes or 7 minutes, something like this. I hide my phone or hide my laptop, but I didn't have any time and space for hiding this.
What about other people? Were other people in the apartment also hiding things, or like, was it too nervous, the atmosphere there?
There was a very nervous atmosphere, and everybody trying to hide their stuff, hide their laptops, hide their phones, mm-hmm. and texting that policeman SWAT is out of the door and they gonna arrest us.
So what happened next? Were you one of the first one who saw them, or were you in the further room?
I was in the further room, and I heard the sound of crashing door, and then I heard screaming of SWAT. Everybody's lay down on the floor and put your hands down your neck. And then the SWAT was in our room. They grabbed me by my feet, grabbed me to the floor, to the next room. This was very hard because they hit me to all the furniture. My legs, my head was hitting to the furniture. I instantly got up and I saw the face of the SWAT guy, and then he started to hit me. And then for the something like 5 or 2 minutes, the only feeling I had was hurt, was a very big hurt. This was so terrible. This was the biggest hurt that I've ever felt.
So what was happening afterwards? How much time did you spend lying on the floor?
4.5 hours. They started to searching house. They started to humiliate everybody's around us. They started to joking about everybody's in a very humiliating way. They said that prisoners will rape us in the ass. That they did. They hitting a little bit us when we started to move or speak or something. And it was happened for 4.5 hours.
And during these 4 hours, they were just taking all your belongings, like confiscating everything, or did they start confiscating later? Like, what were they doing basically while you were on the floor?
They searching the house. Then after something about 3 or 3.5 hours, the SWAT come away and policemen and detectives come to our flat. And after that, they started to confiscate our things. And after about 5 hours, they came to me. They start to search my bag. They confiscate my laptop, my phone, my notebook. And when they search my bag, I feel pain because mm-hmm. I can't stand, I can't sit because of very big pain. And because of that, I was first who came out from flat to bus.
And how much time did you spend in the bus, and what was happening in the bus?
In the bus, I spent something around 2 hours. And in the bus, I lay down because I felt pain. It was very hurt in me. After 2 hours, when everybody came seeing to a bus, they riding us to a policeman station.
Did you have a chance to talk to the defense lawyer when you left the apartment, like on your way to the bus? Did you talk to the lawyer?
When I left the flat, I saw our lawyer, but policemen didn't stop us. And when we walk in, the defense asked me, what happened? Did they hit you? And I quickly said to them that they hit me, that they confiscated all my stuff and everything.
So what happened at the police station?
At the police station, we're waiting, and then the other detective guys came to us and said that they're going to ask us some questions. But they didn't ask about anything, just easy stuff like what's your name, what's your surname, where do you work, where do you live.
Were your friends and family waiting for you next to the police station?
No, my family didn't knew anything about this. I didn't want to my father or my brother to thinking about this. I just didn't want it because I care about them and I care about their mental health. I didn't say anything to them.
Have you told them afterwards when everything finished? Did you tell them?
Yes. Afterwards, I tell them.
And what was their reaction?
Their reaction was, oh, hell, how did this happen? You didn't do anything. You are a nice guy and you didn't do anything. You are in law. You didn't do anything out of the law.
So what about your personal attitude? Like, did it scare you a lot? Do you think of changing your workplace or anything?
I didn't think about change my work, not at all. And I said to you that, that after that, I think about I'm a good guy and the SWAT hitting me, the SWAT telling me that I'm nothing in this country. And after that, I think that I need to continue working where I work. I think that I didn't deserve this, and that's why I need to continue working, because this is crazy. This is the thing that couldn't happen in normal place, and that's why I need to continue working.
When you were going to this apartment, did you have any idea of any potential risk that something like this might happen?
No. I think about this, that the rally was approved by government, and then everything going to be okay. And I was in a very good mood. I bought a cappuccino to myself. I eat a good breakfast in a very good mood. And I was thinking that today is going to be a very great day.
Well, that was a day to remember.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, thank you so much. So now that you know what was happening to the guys in the apartment, let me tell you what was happening to me in the meantime. When I left the apartment, I felt a nagging mix of two emotions, being happy because of such a lucky escape, and feeling sorry because I was not there with my friends, was not sharing this experience, if I might call it so. That's a disgusting feeling, I have to admit. But suddenly it changed for a different one, when I started getting calls from the landlord who evidently got reports from his neighbors and the local police inspector. He shouted at me and demanded me to sign the rent agreement right away. So I went to see the guy to sign the contract. After I did that, we started getting reports that all the 10 people who were inside the apartment would be taken to an interrogation on the case of inciting mass protests. And that was quite creepy. At that moment I realized that though I was not present in the apartment, we were in the same boat anyway. In the long run, the landlord submitted my rent contract to the investigators, and my surname was there in the report along with the names of all the others. Fortunately, late at night we learned that my colleagues were not taken to an interrogation, but just to a police station instead. And later, they were released without administrative offense reports. Most likely, the whole masquerade was staged just to prevent the broadcast from happening. Unfortunately, this was not the only thing that shook Navalny team that week. On Thursday, 2 days before the rally, investigators came to 6 staff members to search their homes and to interrogate them about money laundering. Money laundering is yet another criminal case that had been initiated these days. This one relates to the Anti-Corruption Foundation only. The staff of the foundation is reported to use dirty money from unestablished sources. That's already paradoxical. How can money be dirty if you don't know the source of it? In reality, these were the donations sent to the foundation in the form of bitcoins. In order to use this money, the foundation had to sell the bitcoins and then deposit the cash into its bank accounts. In the criminal case, several staff members are mentioned, one of them the lady who used to work as a record keeper. The police came to the address where she used to live, and where now Navalny team video maker lives, raided his flat, found 2 million in cash, that was the money he got from selling his apartment in Moscow region, and confiscated this money too, without even looking at the sale contract. I know it sounds like nonsense, but it's true. As for Anti-Corruption Foundation itself, its office was searched too. All the equipment was confiscated. On top of that, part of the foundation's bank accounts were frozen, withholding the amount of the so-called laundered money. And a quick update on the candidates. It would be really quick. Last time I mentioned that the authorities started to use the practice of putting a person under a second administrative arrest right at the end of the first one. Well, a week passed. New practice is in place. Now they detain everyone after the second arrest and put them under the third. Evidently, no one of the arrested candidates will be set free before the election's date. Lubov Sobol, the lady candidate who cannot be arrested because of a small daughter, has been fined for almost 1 million rubles already. Good news is that she has finished her hunger strike after 32 days. She made this decision after the mother of one of the volunteers who supported her in her strike addressed her. This guy is now in custody and he cannot receive any proper medical care, so he cannot keep on with the hunger strike there. I would like to remind you that this is a fundraising podcast I have started as a part of my campaign to raise money for my master's studies at the University of Berkeley. So if you like what I'm doing, please go to GoFundMe.com, search for the campaign named A Voice from Russia, and make some contribution. Special thanks for this episode go to Alexei Shuplikov, who kindly agreed to talk to me about his experience during the raid. 60,000 people at the rally on the 10th of August are a lot for Moscow. What's even better is that now the protest is supported by many celebrities, rap singers, bloggers, actors. Protest events are likely to continue till the election date and even further, because now they are related not only to elections, but also to the unlawful prosecution of those who are now in custody. Stay tuned and listen to A Voice from Russia.